The VGRG Gaming Podcast, episode 460, recorded on March 15th, 2017. Edition of the TD Gaming Podcast in the 293rd episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am Jonah Falcon.
I am TJ Denzer.
I am Scott Burke.
VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry. So we're sort of ticking down to number 300 there. Or ticking up to 300.
Getting there.
Yep. And what's interesting is that we're at 460, which is a nice round number. I'm going to have to see in 2 years who I'm going to have to invite. Oh, wait, 2 years? No, I'm sorry. It's a weekly thing. So it's going to be in 40 weeks, which is at the end of the year. I'll see who I can scrounge up to do that epic 500th podcast. There's not many of them out there.
Don't get Paul or Dan or Jordan.
The big thing that happened over the past weekend is I went to PAX East. As a matter of fact, if you didn't notice, I had to condense two episodes into one big two-hour one. Cooler on my PC got fried. And wouldn't you know, one of the giveaways that I got at PAX East was a new fan. So
that
after,
is good.
Well, it's after I already fixed the damn thing.
Oh.
So yeah, I spent all that money for nothing. Did you guys, how much did you pay attention to PAX from afar?
I was reviewing Zelda all weekend, so I actually didn't have a chance to look at much of anything.
Okay, you're busy playing a Wii U game, got it. Scott, how about you?
Didn't realize PAX East had gone yet, I wasn't watching it.
That's okay. Here's the thing, is that they had the Mass Effect Andromeda panel that everybody watched from on the stream. I didn't go to the thing because I'm still on a all-media blackout for Mass Effect Andromeda, even though it keeps on leaking through. It's almost gotten to the point of, like, Switch? What's that? I mean, every single place I go, every gaming website I look at, they're talking about Andromeda, 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 Andromeda. You know, it shows you how fickle the, I'm not gonna peg the video gamers as fickle, because I could apply that to everything, everybody, but...
Short attention span.
Yeah, I mean, right now, Andromeda is what's hot, which is fine. I'm a huge Andromeda fan. It's become my science fiction IP of choice, even beyond Star Wars and Star Trek and Doctor Who and all that. I guess it's because it's the sci-fi IP of my generation. Because, you know, Star Trek started in the 60s and Star Wars started in the 70s. And, yeah, I know I saw it in theaters when I was a kid, but it never really clicked for me. Mass Effect is the one I got in on the ground floor and I really enjoyed.
Mm-hmm.
How about you, TJ? What is your sci-fi IP of choice?
Oh, geez.
I'll just pick one. You don't have to say I like them all.
I do like a lot of them. That's the problem, is that I've played so many of them and I've enjoyed a lot of them that not one particular one jumps right off the bat. I would say that out of my top three, maybe can I say the StarCraft series? I'll say StarCraft series.
Okay, I mean, that does, it has a history, it has a story. Everybody knows about Kerrigan, you know. So yeah,
yeah, and I enjoyed when StarCraft II was announced and we finally found out that we were going to get to actually follow that story further, I was ecstatic.
Like, yeah, same here.
Halo is great for me, but and it has a lot of lore, but it hasn't quite caught me like Mass Effect did. How about you, Alpha, or Scott? Why am I calling you Alpha? Why am I calling you by your code name all of a sudden?
I don't know.
Maybe it's a sci-fi thing, because Alpha Shard is basically a science fiction-y thing, isn't it? Or actually, fantasy? Wait, is Alpha Shard fantasy or science fiction?
It could be both, a merging of the two.
Okay. Because you think Shard, when I hear Shard, I think of the Dark Crystal.
Yeah, definitely. that's a reason, and Alpha is kind of science-y.
It's first. Yeah.
So, it's a merging of the two. But for me, it really is Star Trek, but
yeah, I love Star Trek ones too.
Like, I mean, Babylon 5 I don't think is really in video games, but I love that one.
Here's the thing. Well, it doesn't have to be in video games. And here's the thing. If there's no shame in loving Star Trek, because I loved Star Trek a long time. I mean, Mass Effect is just a little bit beyond Star Trek for me. And only because, you know, Star Trek came from 1960s, and, you know, I know generations and all that stuff. But, you know, Mass Effect is the one that was made for my generation.
Mm-hmm. So. I guess it's just, yeah, Star Trek mostly for me.
Well, which Trek then?
Next Generation or DS9. I guess it's what I'm in the mood for sometimes. But DS9 gets really gritty and more that the characters and people feel more realistic, more relatable. So I think that's
the thing with Star Trek: The Next Generation is that the first 2 years maybe were very modular. You know, every episode was a self-contained story. They didn't get into storylines until year three. DS9 is basically one huge storyline that starts with Captain Sisko being the emissary of the Prophets, and then at the end he joins the Prophets. Spoiler warning for something that ended in, what, 2003? What, wait, no, when did DS9 end? 2003, I think, maybe? No. I know Star Trek ended in... Star Trek Next Generation ended in 1993.
All right, I'll Google it real quick.
You don't have to Google it. Let's just say it's a long time. There's no spoiler to know that Sisko joined the Founders. They're doing another party. I may get to meet and chat around with Nana Visitor again. For those of you who don't know, that's Kira Nerys.
Oh! Final episode was 1999. It did not make it into the 2000s.
Okay. I suspected that, but I wasn't sure. And you know the funny thing is that they were doing the worst episodes of Star Trek video I was watching, and fans voted number one the final episode of Enterprise, and that was the only Enterprise episode I ever liked. Partly because, of course, it was basically a extension of the story about the Pegasus, you know, with Will Riker having to deal with Admiral Pressman. But that's why I liked it, and I don't care if Enterprise fans didn't like it because it included Riker and Troy. Here's the thing, guys. Those two characters are better than any of the characters in that show. And yes,
kind of the problem right there.
I'm going to tell you something. Scott Bakula was woefully miscast as a starship captain. Even Kate Mulgrew was much better. Must have been something you assimilated.
I think it's more the writing that was the problem and not the acting.
Well, the minute that power ballad started on the first episode, I said, yeah, I'm done. It's been a long, long time. Such an idiotic.
I like that song. I'm like the only one that seems to like it.
It's not Star Trek. It's fine if it's on its own. It's not Star Trek. I mean, you know what they should have done? If they had used the Starfleet Academy score, that would have been good. And that was a video game, Starfleet Academy, for those who don't know. Wow, we're getting into a lot of sci-fi talk right now.
I was going to say, I'm gonna change mine. Dune, hands down.
There you go.
Well, here's the thing. I liked the 1984 film because of Toto's score. It had one of the best science fiction scores ever. And it also had Patrick Stewart, which ties it back to Star Trek.
Like, StarCraft gave me a good moment, but I grew up on Dune. Like,
well, here's a question. Do you like the Brian Herbert stories, or are you just only Frank Herbert did the only Dune stories?
I haven't gotten into the Brian Herbert. I've only read Frank's work so far.
Okay. A lot of Dune fans would say you're not missing anything, so...
That's what I've heard, but I do want to know what goes on, because I know that there's lulls, and then it gets good, and then, I don't know. It depends on who you talk to, but I hear that there's good moments down the line. But that was a series I grew up on. Like,
really?
I started with the first Command and Conquer game that was on Sega. That was where I first learned about Dune, and I had no idea, but I was playing through it and I enjoyed it. And I always enjoyed the music and the world and the idea of these three houses of these. Well, there's obviously only two houses in the book.
Have you ever played the tabletop game?
Dune? I have not.
Well, it's been remade into Rex, which basically takes the Dune license and turns it into the Twilight Imperium license. But it's one of the best board games you'll ever play, the original Dune. board game. You should look for it. And of course, by the way, for those who don't know, Dune 2 was the very first RTS.
Yeah, yeah. It was Battle for Arrakis was groundbreaking.
Yeah, and the same. Wait, was it the same people who did? Was it the forerunners of? Oh no, it was Westwood. Was it Westwood Interactive? The guys who did Command and Conquer, were the ones who did Dune 2.
They handled almost all of the Dune games, I think. But I don't know if they did the first one, but they certainly did Dune 2 all the way up to.
Yeah, it was Westwood, by the way. By the way, Dune 2 was released for the Amiga. And it was released for the Genesis Mega Drive.
Yeah, that's the one I played it on.
You played it on the Genesis?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Which, let me tell you, playing a RTS with a controller is hot garbage.
Well, at least back then. I mean, Halo 2, they actually have what's called, you know, the Halo Wars thing, they actually did make it viable. Although, from what I understand with Halo 2 is that if you play Halo 2 on the PC, you have to ramp up the difficulty because otherwise it's just a cakewalk. You have to because if you're using a mouse and keyboard. When you're using a controller, then you have to play it on normal difficulty. But if you don't, if you play it on PC, it's really, really easy.
But yeah, so I played the game first, then I saw the movie, and then eventually I read the books, which is probably the complete opposite of what most people do.
You know, the funny thing is that I still remember sitting in the theater and seeing the Virginia Madsen come on thing and talk all this garbage, and then the music by Toto comes, dun, 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 and you see the desert, and it's like, wow, that was great. And I saw it in a theater with really loud speakers.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever seen the documentary Yodorovsky's Dune?
Oh yeah, he was full of shit. You know, Salvador Dali as Padishah Emperor of the Fourth, and a lot of all these other celebrities. It wasn't going to happen, but it's a nice fantasy,
right? And it's just interesting to see that concept art. That's what I'm mostly interested in. Is the way he envisioned things was weird and bizarre and pretty great.
Well, if you watch his movie El Topo, then you'll see why he's so weird. If you're going to do that, you should see the documentary about the making of the Island of Dr. Moreau. And you'll find out how Mini-Me came to an existence because Marlon Brando became obsessed with Nelson De La Rosa and had him dress up like him. So you have this little guy who's literally 2'6", I remember, tall. Dressed exactly like Marlon Brando's, you have this whole big, huge, hulking guy of a guy, and this little teeny tiny guy, and that's where Mike Myers got the idea for Mini Me.
Hmm.
So yeah, it was Richard. Oh, I forgot his name. Doctor of Island, Doctor Moreau, and I'll find the name of the documentary. It's actually on Netflix. Lost Soul, The Doomed Journey of Richard Stanley's Doctor of Island, Island of Dr. Moreau. You have to see it. Nice. It's hilarious. He went into the woods after he was let off the thing. He went into the woods and started living off the land and did all these witch doctor things. And then he snuck back onto the set dressed in a bear youth outfit as an extra. just to name a few things. Yeah, it was strange. Anyways, we're talking about video games here. So we're going to talk about PAX East and some of the games we saw. Now, one of the games I played and I really enjoy was Earthfall, which can best be described as a science fiction version of Left 4 Dead, except now you can lay traps and all that stuff. So it takes the – here's the thing. I like Vermintide, but I don't love it. You know, I think – I don't think in that kind of game I enjoy melee combat much. Melee combat to me is just to push people away. It's not to attack. So being able to shoot again, and this time it's not zombies, it's aliens, and very H.R. Giger style aliens too. I know you guys weren't that impressed with it, but I'm going to tell you, playing it was really a hoot.
You know, I did. They had at PAX South, they had this giant, like probably 10-foot tall diorama of one of the monsters, and
they had it there too.
Yeah, that thing is pretty great. I it's not that I'm not interested in this game. It's just that I never got a chance to play it. It looks if it is like you said, you got to play it and it's like Left 4 Dead, but with straight up H.R. Giger aliens. That's...
But it's not only that. It's that you have a lot more things to do. It's a lot more story driven. You have to you know, Left 4 Dead had a little of that, you know, like when you're in that mall and you have to fill the car with gas to escape. Mm-hmm. This one has more detailed stuff. Like you have to activate the computer, you have to start the thing, you have to do this, you have to do that, you know, and all this while you have to be careful. And there's a lot of quiet moments too, you know, in which you enter this place and there's no one there, and you know that that place is going to be swarming with aliens, so it's like you're scrambling. And you also have the traps. And one of the things is that Fortnite has a release date, and I'm thinking, Jesus Christ, what have they been doing? Because remember Fortnite?
Yeah.
It's finally coming out? You know, it's like, what?
I gotta say, the trailer did not show any of what you're describing. It just looked like it didn't really look that much different from Doom, where they were just shooting at stuff and a whole bunch of gunfire and aliens running around. And graphically, it looked great, but it just didn't. I didn't see what was different.
It's really. It's Left 4 Dead, basically. And you know what? I love co-op games. There was another game that was there called Guns of Icarus Alliance. I had not heard of Guns of Icarus. Apparently, it's a steampunk blimp combat game that's PvP. And they're coming out with Alliance, which is a co-op version of that PvE, player versus environment. And you have one person is steering the ship, and everybody else is running around the ship, manning guns and repairing stuff. And it's like, that's the sort of thing I want to see. And now I know why Microsoft is backing that Pirates game.
Yeah.
You know, in which one person's on the boat. The thing is that the only unfortunate thing I wish I could have seen was ship-to-ship combat, you know, where people are hopping onto your ship and fighting. It probably is in the PvP version. If anybody's listening and plays Guns of Icarus, that you can probably tell us.
Yeah, on the original Guns, I don't know how Alliance is going to be, but on the original Guns of Icarus, I don't think I remember aware of the idea that you could jump ship and fight people on their own ship.
You should have that, but. And if you make the wrong step, unlike a pirate game, which you just fall in the water, this, you're going to fall all the way to the ground.
Yeah, the thing about combat in Guns of Icarus is that you had such long-range weapons, or so much was going on that it would be – and you're so high up in the sky that it would be disastrous to try to jump off your own ship.
But Guns of Alliance was really exciting because you had these gigantic dreadnoughts coming, and you had to – make sure that you could take out their guns before they took you out and stuff like that. And people were running around with stuff on fire and having to fix the weapons. And it was, you know, it's the sort of thing I like where gaming is going, you know, especially in the co-op. The technology is finally allowing us to live out our fantasies of an alternate world. And even though it was just this valley, you know, a very, very big valley, but even though it was just a valley, it felt like lived in. You know, like a real place. Like, there's going to be a TV show. It felt like, yeah, I could sense a TV series would be great here, you know? The adventures of them on their flying ship. So we're going to move on to a game that everybody loved at the show. Everybody loved it. It's Kingsway, which is actually being published by Adult Swim. And I don't think it's actually an Adult Swim.
I was going to say, they're the publisher, but it's the developer is this dude, Andrew Moorish.
It's a role-playing game in which you're playing it through a Windows 3.1 or Amiga iOS operating system. You're playing it. Go ahead.
Kind of reminds me of Castle of the Winds, where you played an RPG Windows 3.1, and you had little windows to manage your stuff.
And this one takes it a little bit further. It makes it so that micromanaging all these windows is a part of the RPG. Mm-hmm. You know, and I said Amiga OS, and a lot of people agreed with me. It was more like an Amiga OS than it was Windows 3.1.
Nicer than 3.1.
Yeah, it had those. I'm going to tell you something. Those crisp little icons I remember from my Amiga. So what happens is you have all these windows open, your inventory and all that stuff, and all of a sudden, hey, look, a skeleton is attacking. You have to deal with that window right now because, you know, and all this stuff is going on, and it's such a refreshing. It's a retro game, but it's a retro PC game, and it isn't that it's a retro PC game in terms of graphics. It's a retro PC game in terms of operating system. How often
I don't mind managing windows, but I've always heard other people complaining when there's so many little windows that they have to manage and get through, and that seems to bother some people.
Well, no, I think a lot of people complain about having to go through consecutive menus like you do in so many JRPGs. Click here to get to the items. Click here to go. No. In this case, all the windows are open and you have to arrange them, and then you. So you're not really. You have a mouse and keyboard, so you don't have to go through these windows. I mean, these menus. There are no menus, really. I mean, you just have to keep an eye on each of the windows. And it's sort of like taking you back, you know? Like I said, it feels more retro than, say, Mega Man 10. You know, yeah. It feels like you're playing... It feels like you're 10 years old, it's 1990, and you're having to deal with the fact that your computer is a piece of crap, but you don't know it. So, TJ.
I mean, it really does look like you have, like... looking at some of these windows, it's like... It makes me think of things like Chip's Challenge and Pipe Dream and
Pipe Dreams, just like, yes! When you, for those who don't know, Windows 3.1 came with a game called Pipe Dreams, which I rocked at, by the way. But imagine playing Pipe Dreams and having 10 windows with different pipes.
Well, I was thinking, it's like, it to me, looks like you've got, like... Almost like if you were to go ahead and like play Pipe Dream, but you also have Minesweeper running in one screen, but you also have Chip's Challenge running in another screen, and just all that balancing. Also, you're trying to organize your folders at the same time. It looks ridiculously chaotic, but really funny and fun.
But it's that good kind of chaotic, like FTL chaotic, you know, in which you're never really overwhelmed. You just have a lot of information being thrown at you, but the information is easily manageable.
Mm-hmm.
Scott?
Yeah, definitely. It looks like it'll be fun, and I haven't heard the... I have to listen to the music later. But I hope... I don't know how expensive do you think it'll be, like $20?
This looks like a $20 to $30 game. It's And you know what? It's one of those games I'm going to be interested to see if it comes to console and how they're going to handle it. So the next game I went to and I got to play was Snake Pass. And this is a platformer that's a really weird platformer in which you're playing a snake. And here's the deal. You have to press right trigger to make it move forward, I believe. Yeah, right trigger to make it move forward. And this is on an Xbox controller. You have to wiggle the left analog stick back and forth to make him go faster. You have to press A to lift his head. You hold the left trigger if you want him to grip something. And you press Y if you want little birdie to hold up your tail. So in this, you're learning how to slither up these poles and these obstacles. And it's basically a collectathon. You know, you're trying to collect all these orbs and stuff like that. But the act of learning how to control...
Like that.
The act of... moving this snake is all the game. It's like Octodad and Quap in that way, in which a lot of the game is learning how to control them more than actually navigating the course. But it is it's a platform. Like I said, also the graphics are very Viva Pinata-ish. You know, I got that Viva Pinata feel. Not Banjo-Kazooie or those, but more like a Viva Pinata, like the snake was actually a pinata.
Yeah, it makes me think a little bit of, like, later Rare stuff. It makes me think of, like, Banjo-Kazooie, but, like, along the lines of Nuts and Bolts, or, like, that thing they did with Conker a little while back where they teased putting out something new with it, but then they didn't. It's very colorful, and it's very lush. I like the cartoonish design, and I like all the color they used with this.
I like the color, the graphics as well, and I just liked it. It looked like a different kind of puzzle platforming game where you know, you said, like, controlling the snake, and I like that there's a complex control system where, you know, you got all these different actions to do on the different buttons. So a lot of times it's, you know, just the jump button or whatever, but this time with this game, you're going to have all these different ways of trying to navigate and do different things, and I noticed that, like, the snake was trying to bite on certain things, and it might bring some really interesting gameplay, you know, trying to navigate to these places.
Well, here's the thing. It's frustrating in a good way. It's frustrating in like, oh, okay, I have to – let me try that once more. You know, like I said, it's like Octodad in which a lot of the game is coming from controlling it. And you'll find yourself like, oh, you know. But after a while, right. You start – you know, when you start navigating it like a pro, you feel like an ace. You know, it's not impossible like Quap or Octodad, you know. There, you can get a skill, and according to the developer, he said that after an hour and a half, you fully get integrated with the controls as it goes along, and you start collecting the snake a lot better. It comes with, I think, 15 levels, and they wouldn't confirm it, but they hinted around there would be more. I really hope this one takes off because, you know, it's different. You know, it's a different type of platformer. It also has that nice sedate quality. There are no enemies, at least not that I know of. The only enemy is yourself.
I'm fine with that.
Yeah, so we're going to move on to the next one, and that is For the King, which is a tactical JRPG, something we haven't had in a while. I mean, every time I think of it, I think of a game like that, I think of Final Fantasy Tactics. It also has a co-op mode, too. Scott, you said you liked what you saw from this. And oh, by the way, yes, it's also in early access right now.
Well, that's cool. But I do like co-op tactics. I mean, I've never done that before where it's co-op, so that'll be interesting to try something new. Maybe we'll play with TJ or somebody.
The thing about this is that it's actually an open world. Not open world as an open world, you know, like, but it has a large world that you navigate, and then you get into fights in the overworld. You know, a lot of hexagons mm-hmm. and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. I look at this and I, like, for one, the Nier Behemoth game that came out. What's the name of that one? The
Autonoma? Nier? What did you say?
The Behemoth.
Oh, Behemoth.
Or Behemoth. Yeah,
oh,
Behemoth.
Yeah, that's the other game that was there that I actually played as well, which I forgot to put on the list, but we'll discuss that in a minute.
It reminds me a little bit of that. It reminds me a little bit of the Banner Saga, which was also a great game.
I just got Banner Saga 2 for free on the Xbox One, and you know, I didn't back it on Kickstarter, so I'm debating with it. I'm waiting for – I shouldn't really wait. I mean, it's $20 for the first Banner Saga. And Banner Saga mm-hmm. 3, for those who don't know, is right now being crowdfunded.
Right, and they also put out a board game. Have you seen that?
Nope, but I check it. Mm.
Yeah, so there's a lot of things going on here. Like, I see that there's a lot of classes going on as well.
Well, that's look, you know, Final Fantasy set the bar for the tactical RPG. You know, if you don't have a lot of classes, then right. people look at you weird. Oh, you're not a real tactical RPG. Did you play Final Fantasy Tactics, Scott?
Yes, of course.
Well, not of course. Well, okay. So you're saying yes, of course. What are you, stupid? I did. I couldn't get into it because there was just so much to it. You know, I'm more of a Heroes of Might and Magic kind of guy. So the difference between this and something like Final Fantasy Tactics is that one of the things they did was they made the graphic the characters a lot larger and more lush.
Yeah.
And, you know, so it has not really a rare feel. It has that 16-bit feel, but I'm not quite placing it. Maybe it's like a Sega 16-bit feel to it.
I think it's a little bit more than 16-bit.
Well, I mean, well, okay, 32-bit. You know what I'm talking about. It has that console look to it. It's a PC game, for those who are wondering.
Mm-hmm.
So that leads us, which I didn't have listed, was the Behemoth's new game. And, you know, one of the nice things about Behemoth is that they always have a breakfast on the first day for the press. So I had my bagel, I had my pound cake, I had my muffin top. And the game that they showed off was Pit People, which is a tactical RPG, but not in the mode of Final Fantasy Tactics. Basically, it's of course it looks like every other you know, it has the same aesthetic as every other Behemoth game. If you've seen Alien Hominid, if you've seen Castle Crashers, you know what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
I played a little bit. It has a lot more story than anything Behemoth has ever done, and it has that wry sense of humor that Castle Crashers had, except now with dialogue. It's very, the controls are extremely simple, but I can sense there's some deep strategy when you get later in the game. You know, I mean, there's one scene in which you have to avoid a gigantic 500-foot bear throwing up on everything, and you get hurt if the throw up hits you. Or is it blood? I don't know which. It was either blood or throw up.
Could be either with the behemoth.
Yeah.
One of the most interesting things about this is I can't really think of a RTS I've ever seen before where like you set up your moves and then everybody moves at once and one swift go and it basically takes their attack based on context of where you move them and automatically makes it happen.
Also, the thing is that you do not tell who your people are going to fight. You basically tell them to go to this position and they do it themselves. For example,
like Ogre Bath.
I learned that the guy with the shield I had to put on the right of the girl because what happens is everybody in the right were inaccessible but had archeries and they would fire arrows and he had the shield to block the arrows. If he was on the left, they would all hit her. But if I was there, he would automatically what's it called, shield her from the arrows. So there's a lot of context sensitive stuff going on there.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, the sense of humor is great. Stamper is a fantastic weirdo.
Just look at Alien Hominid. So one of the games that I forgot to list, which was actually heavily hyped there, was Streets of Rogue. And basically, it has the same. It's a top-down RPG that's sort of like Grand Theft Auto meets Deus Ex meets Hotline Miami.
And it's put a whole bunch of hot topic words in the trailer. It was like PvP.
They were, yeah. But the thing is that they were making fun of it. It's also a parody as well. It's also one of those games that's by a single guy, Matt Dabrowski. Or was it Dabrowski? I know his first name is Matt. And it has a lot of humor, and it's like I said, it's a roguelike, and it's also a co-op roguelike, which is you know, it's not like Diablo in that way, because you know, but there's always
room. It's not Diablo. It's definitely this chaotic.
It's Hotline. Yeah, it's like Hotline Miami, except not as dark and depressing and violent. The violence in the game is very comical.
I think it's pretty violent. Maybe not depressing, but definitely violent.
Oh, no, it's just the basic, you know, fountain of blood that's over the top. And it has a gorilla in it, so.
Yeah.
You play as a gorilla, and that's always
There's
nice.
There's a lot of action going on.
Yeah, it's also on Early Access for only $13, too. Or $13.50. For those people who like really fast-paced, just, you know, an indie game that's really fast-paced and fun, and they thought Hotline Miami was too dark and gritty, try Streets of Rogue. We're going to go to the polar opposite of that, and that's Yonder, which I played. I don't want to sound cruel, but it's like Baby's First Zelda. It's an open-world game, but it's very open and colorful and friendly. You said you liked it, Scott.
Yeah, it looks like a lot of fun, actually. There's, like I said before, it's co-op, so all your friends can get in there. And to me, it almost looks like Gauntlet, and you're fighting each other. And
there's a strong MMO element to it, though. One of the missions I had was, okay, I want you to pick up these 8 rocks on the beach. Okay. And the 8th rock was really hard to find. I couldn't find it, so I gave up. But it is. Here's the thing: if you want to leave your kid alone with a game, this is the one to leave them with. It's gonna keep their attention for hours because there's a lot of stuff to do. It's like Zelda in its aesthetic, actually. You know, it has that, and the music is very low key and peaceful. Not lullaby, but it actually has that calming thing, you know. So I can just picture even adults just zoning out, playing Yonder, just watching them run across this field.
Let's see. Yeah.
I'm just saying, anything else?
Not for this game, no. I think it does look like fun, but gonna have to try out a demo and see how easy it is to play with my friends on this one.
Yeah, I guess I think it feels to be aiming at a younger crowd, which isn't bad, mm-hmm. you know. Now, one of the games that I really liked was Battle Chef Brigade, which was also in the Adult Swim. And basically, it's like Cooking Mama meets Monster Hunter, where you go out into your backyard and you kill things and you bring them back and you cook them. And you have to do a weird match three thing to make the dish as delicious as possible. But there's also a storyline going on, you know. So it's a weird combination. And, you know, God bless Adult Swim. They're finding these weird stuff to do. I mean,
yeah.
The Rick and Morty VR game I already knew about. That's, you know, whatever. But some of these games that they had in their thing were just really strange and fun.
Yeah. Like, they've been hitting it hard on platformers for a while, and I've enjoyed most of the platformers that they've done. But, like, I enjoyed Cooking Mama. I'm sure I would enjoy this. It looks funny.
Yeah.
Oh, the Battle Chef one?
Yeah.
Battle Chef Brigade.
That looks very cool. I like there's a difference there where you have to go out and it looks like you fight monsters and collect yeah. ingredients and then you bring it back to cook, which looks like a lot of fun and changes this game genre up. And I think
yeah, it also has a match three in it, too. I mean, you have a match three game while you're cooking.
yeah. yeah.
Another game that I liked and I believe... Oh, I lost myself for a moment. Which I really liked was the Darwin Project. And basically, this is sort of like the Running Man, in which here's the deal. You have three teams of two, and you're in a cold environment, so you have to build a fire bee in a cabin. But these teams are hunting each other, and there's a strong Hunger Games element to it, too. So you can build traps as they hunt you and all that stuff. But the kicker comes from the fact that there are six quadrants and each quadrant closes down, making the arena shrink and shrink and shrink. And here's the kicker. If two players from the same team are at the end, they have to turn on each other and kill the other one in order to win. There's only one winner. You may have three teams, but you know what? If you're on the same team and you both survive to the very end, well, guess what? It's time to end that alliance and just go for the throat.
Wow.
That could be really awesome or really terrible, because, like, what's to stop me from just shooting my friends right or even before that happens?
Because then you'll get eaten alive by the other teams.
Hmm.
Because cooperation is very important for you to beat against these other people, because they're going to be setting up there's a lot of stuff to do, traps to make and all that stuff. You can craft invisibility cloaks that make you invisible for a short period of time. You can craft something that allows you to see people through walls, that sort of stuff. And one of the best parts was, even more fun than playing it, was watching it. Watching these teams go and watching them, you know, hunt each other, that was real fun. And I think now I can believe how the Hunger Games might actually be a possibility in the real world. It's very alpha right now, but I like that concept too. You know, it's really weird.
Yeah, it does seem very ambitious, but I can see a lot of possible flaws and a lot of playtesting that'll have to smooth out that process.
I think a lot of people will like this game, though. I mean, I don't think this will be for me, but I do see how other people would enjoy this.
Right. So, there's another game that I saw which was really interesting, and it's called At Sundown. And here's the deal. You can't see anybody, including yourself, unless there's a light shined on them. So you have this turn. Yeah. And the only way you know you can navigate is when you get near a wall, your controller will start to vibrate, you know, depending on where you are. So you have that little intenseness of having a four-player this death match, and you have a vague idea of where you are, and you have to figure out where the other people are and to fight them and shoot them. I only decided to give it a shout out because it was just really fun to play. So one game that you said that you really liked was Dauntless.
Teacher. Yes. Yes, I love that game.
Tell us about it.
It's Monster Hunter for PC. Like, at its core, it's Monster Hunter for PC. Yep. Which, and my knowledge, has never happened before, and that seems crazy to think that for as long as Monster Hunter's been around, we haven't had a game like that.
Well, but, I mean, Dragon's Dogma came close.
Yeah, sort of.
I mean, Dragon's Dogma had that thing in which when you fought a large enemy, a large monster, it was an entire game unto itself. And that's how it came sort of close. I mean, I know it's not Monster Hunter, but it was sort of that feel.
Mm-hmm.
Have you played it, or are you just watching?
Yeah,
it?
Yeah, I had the opportunity to play it, and I've watched it, and just like... You don't pick a class in that game. It's like Monster Hunter where you pick a weapon and that determines your moveset. And so you've got this entire possibility of play styles and characters that can just make for interesting compositions when it comes to any fight. Like
we should say this is a co-op game.
Yes, this is like Monster Hunter. This is a game that you should not take on by yourself. I mean, you can, but some of those monsters are just absolutely beastly to try to take down, and there's no way you're going to be able to do it alone. And you've got these compositions that people were just trying on, even as we were just watching this on the PAX floor, and like, it's really interesting because you have like an axe dude, and his whole thing is that he damages the enemy, and while he's doing like normal attacks, he charges up like a burst attack. And his attack is slow, so you really want to time that charge and make sure that when you've got it, you hit them. You hit the monster with everything that you've got in one blow. Whereas you've got like other classes that are less strenuous on the timing, and where you're just sort of trying to set that guy up for his stuff while you're trying to distract. And I love that. I love the idea of being able to strategize and put these things together on the fly as you go. But it's also the kind of thing where you can set up a ground floor for a big community. Like, people are going to rack themselves trying to figure out the meta and trying to figure out what works best on what monster for the quickest time and the best kill. And I love the idea of that possibility.
That does sound like a lot of fun. I need more co-op games like that where people work together. I mean, this appeals to me more than the Darwin Project, because just that.
Well, the Darwin Project is competitive, and it's almost an e-sport. I think you might, and Earthfall, I mean, if you're not into Left 4 Dead, you know, and you rather have it, you know, in which it's basically survival horror, except on half fast speed, this one is basically, let me ask you a question, though. Are you actively being hunted in the game, or are you always on the offensive?
You are the hunter for the ones that I saw. You're tracking it, and there's a lot of things going on too. Like the entire play area is split up into these floating islands, and your monster will be on one of them, and you track it via like things that you'll see in the environment. You can hear it like moving around, shuffling grass, moving things as it goes. And it's interesting. It was interesting to see it's like a Dark Souls boss in a way, where you, if anyone knows what that's like, you often take the monster down like a third of its health, and then it moves into a different sort of enraged state and accesses a whole bunch of more terrifying attacks.
You know, a game makes me feel bad about Evolve not being what it could have been.
Yeah. Yeah. But it will run away, and you'll have to keep tracking it through the wilderness. And that's where Yeah, you can, like, if you don't get it done in a certain time, or if it becomes too dangerous, then you get pulled out of the mission.
Okay. So another game is a very interesting game, and I mentioned this last week, and that's Reservoir Dogs, which is based on the Tarantino film. And its main gimmick is that you move the first character and have him shoot and do all this stuff. And then even if he gets killed, you then go to the next person, you rewind time, and they start moving while the character that you were doing moves. So the character you did before does all of his moves, and you can actually save that character by having the next character kill the people who would have killed him, you know. So it's basically, and then you go back again, you have a third character, and you can do that. And it's sort of like a top-down shooter, but it plays with time. And that was basically the point that the developer said. They wanted to make it play with time, like the film played with time. They also gave me a candy ear to eat. But it has cool music, and it looks very promising as an action puzzle game. That's basically what it is. You want to get all this stuff done, and you want to use – and by the way, you don't need to use all three. You can just play with one player to increase the difficulty, but that, you know, that's sort of like making it really difficult because you need to coordinate with yourself in this game. Mm-hmm. And it's not like quite Braid. I know there was another game in which you rewound time and you've played with yourself, you know, as your character did stuff. You have a new character coming in and doing stuff while it does the movements that you did before. But it's really fun, and even if you didn't see the movie or anything like that, it's actually a great puzzle shooter, or a puzzle action game, top-down shooter.
Mm-hmm. Trying to think. I know what you're talking about as far as like that time playing thing. It was like something with a robot or something.
Yeah.
If do you lose the is it game over if you lose one of your characters and can't save them, or
no, they just die and they remain dead for the rest of the level. It's when all three of your guys die that happens.
Ah.
And it's very easy for that to happen if you're reckless. Yes.
That sounds.
At some point, you can't save them.
That sounds incredibly difficult, but also fun.
Yeah. Another game that was really neat was Serial Cleaner. Now, unlike Viscera Cleanup Detail, this one has you cleaning up gore and a mess, but it's more cartoony, and also the police are after you, so it has a stealth element to it as well. Now, they're very cagey about who is the serial killer making all these bodies littered about that you're cleaning up. You know, they seem to hint around may have been you in an amnesiac state, but we don't know. But whatever the case is, you're cleaning up all these blood and guts, and you have to, while the police are chasing you. It's really chaotic, and it looks fun. And it was also a hit at the show as well.
This looks like what you would do if you were the guy that followed the guy from Hotline Miami around.
Yeah, basically, yeah. That's basically what you are. Of course, there's a good chance that you maybe are the Hotline Miami guy and you're cleaning up after yourself. We don't know yet. It has, I think, 5 huge levels. Like I said, it's an indie game. It looks really promising, especially in gameplay. I mean, people kept on playing it over and over. It was that much fun.
And this one's in early access as well.
Yeah. So just a note here. One of the things I'm really happy about is Terra is coming to console. And for those of you who don't know, and Scott will probably appreciate this, it's a free-to-play game in which everything is free. There are no hidden gotchas, you know.
Yay!
They know what they're doing there. And it's super popular. And one of the things about this is it's an MMO that's actually an action MMO in which it's not a die roll. You know, and how sometimes in some games like World of Warcraft, if you fire someone, they go around the corner. That arrow just follows them around the corner because it rolled that it was going to hit. You know, no, you have to hit them physically. You can also dodge them any way you like. You can even run between their legs if they're big enough and have them miss you that way. It's a free-to-play MMO. I strongly suggest you try it out when it comes to console or PC. But it's a good way to get achievements, actually. I did play a little bit of The Hollywood Roast, which is the sequel to the Insult Simulator. Mm. And by the way, the first Insult Simulator is only $2 on Steam. And it's okay, you know. It's fun to play with for a bit, you know. Some of the insults make no sense, but sometimes you actually get some funny lines. I don't know where they got the guy who did a dead-on imitation of Morgan Freeman. Because all the insults are also spoken.
Nice.
And we're going to wrap this up. Elder Scrolls Online is getting the Morrowind expansion. And, you know, all I can think of is, you know, just remake Morrowind. You know?
I thought the game was interesting was Yonder. It looks cool. It looks kind of like a much more advanced Harvest Moon kind of game.
We discussed this. We did discuss this.
Oh.
If you want to go on about Yonder, go ahead. Oh, okay, I'm sorry. Well, let me just finish this. Let me ask you, Scott. Would you play? I know there's a mod that turns Skyrim into Morrowind. But would you play a remastered Morrowind that looked as good as Skyrim?
Yeah, sure. Yes.
So go ahead about Yonder, and I'll just edit it and put it back when we were discussing Yonder.
Okay. Yonder looks good because it has, you know, like nice graphics and nice big open world, and has you know, the day night cycle and the crafting and yeah, you're like rebuilding different towns, and yeah, it looks like a nice kind of calm game.
I see exactly what you like about this game.
It's very soft. It's very open. It's like Breath of the Wild, except less ambitious, but still has an open world.
Well, I was thinking the way Scott just described it, it sounds like either like Minecraft or Dragon Quest Builders.
There is some crafting in it.
Yeah, I am continuing to enjoy Dragon Quest Builders right now. Yes.
The other thing that I noted was Quake Champions, which is basically id trying to make their own version of, oh god, I forgot its name already.
Overwatch?
Overwatch, yeah. So it's basically Overwatch with a Quake license.
I mean, they can do it if they want.
Here's the thing. I never really liked the way it felt when you were moving around in Quake. I much preferred Unreal Tournament because it made you actually felt like you were running. In Quake, it felt like you were on ice skates.
Yeah, I mean, it's the separation where it has always been running gun, pure running gun with little to no strategy. And it's just a twitchy reflex shooter, which will be interesting to see how they try to translate that into Overwatch style.
The other game that surprised me that it existed was The Escapist 2. I mean, I know Escapist was popular, but I heard nothing about a sequel. You know, I thought they were just going to continue to make The Escapists, whatever license. What was the licensed version of The Escapist they did? I know one of The Escapists was actually a licensed game.
Wasn't it The Walking Dead?
Yeah, The Walking Dead. Yeah, they did a Walking Dead version of The Escapists. I thought they were just going to continue to do that instead, like the Lego games. You know, the Lego games has every single IP they do, and now they were going to do the same thing. But, you know, I mean, I have it. You know, it's okay game. I never really got into it. Just like I never really got into Prison Simulator. Prison Architect, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
So one last game that we're going to mention very briefly is The Absolver, which struck my eye because it was an MMO that's basically martial arts fighting. And that's everything is martial arts fighting. A lot of kicking and punching in it. It's an action MMO with kicking and punching.
I hope that they can do that better than well, this is a little bit different, but Dungeon Fighter Online did that exact thing. And I enjoyed that. It was very fun, but eventually the player base died out a bit, and then they ended up canning it.
Yeah. Town of Light was shown off there. It was just released, and that is another exploratory game. But this one deals heavily with their lighting engine. They have some incredible lighting effects in it. So we're going to move over to actual game news. And the first news item is Payday owner Starbreeze to publish System Shock 3, and this comes to us from PC Gamer. Besides mention of a Dream development team and scant details of its basic premise, information on Other Side Entertainment's System Shock 3, not to confuse with Night Dive Studios' System Shock remake, has been on thin ground since its official reveal in 2015. God, it's been 2 years. We still don't know an awful lot about the incoming sci-fi shooter, but we do know Payday owner Starbreeze has partnered with Other Side as the game's publisher. This will see the Swedish outfit investing $12 million into the project in order to bring the game to PC and other platforms, whereby Starbreeze stands to recoup 120% of its investment, including marketing costs. I don't know how that's going to happen. How can you recoup more than 100%? I guess, oh, profits. Never mind. While Other Side will retain full... Oh, you know what? Hold on. Let's try that again. This will see the Swedish outfit investing $12 million into the project in order to bring the game to PC and other platforms, whereby Starbreeze will... This will see the Swedish outfit investing $12 million into the project in order to bring the game to PC and other platforms, whereby Starbreeze stands to recoup 120% of its investment, including marketing costs. While Other Side will retain full rights of the Starship System Shock 3 name, Starbreeze will be entitled to 50% of sales revenues once the investments are returned. System Shock 3 is in its early concept stages of development. So yeah, I mean, I vaguely recall System Shock 3 being finally announced. I mean, there was a crap ton of rumors with EA and stuff like that. And then, oh, we're going to do System Shock 3. And then we didn't hear anything about it. So I guess it's still going. And, you know, I'm really looking forward to System Shock 3. I did back the original System Shock remake on Kickstarter.
Is Night Dive handling the development?
System Shock, yes. No, this is Other Side who's doing development.
Okay.
And I believe they are comprised of some of the Looking Glass employees who did System Shock 2. Was it Looking Glass? No, I'm sorry, Irrational. It was Irrational who did System Shock 2.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Kendall Vine is part of them.
It's looking more and more like I'm going to have to play through System Shock 2 real soon.
Played System Shock 2?
No, we went over this on the last episode. I've played the first one. I've played the first one several times, but I have not played the second game.
You have not played System Shock 2?
Correct.
Just the opening video. Look at you, hacker. Running through my... I gotta pull up that sound file now. So, yeah, that's kind of shocking. I haven't played System Shock 2. Did you back the remake of System Shock 1?
No, I just played it way back in the day. And I guess not way back in the day, but back in the day. And I've been looking forward to the remake just because I loved the game. I never made it around to System Shock 2 just because I didn't have a good PC for a long time. I played through the first one, and then I kind of fell off of PC gaming for a while, and then I came back to it later, well after System Shock 2 was out, and it's just one of those things that I haven't made it back to.
Here, let me just play the intro here.
Pathetic creature of meat and bone, panting and sweating as you run through my corridors. How can you challenge a perfect immortal machine?
Yeah, how can you challenge a perfect immortal machine? You know, the problem with System Shock 2 is that it has Shodan's face on the damn box, and that's one of the big reveals in the game.
I didn't hear anything.
Oh, that's okay. It was on my headphone. You wouldn't have heard it. It's going to be spliced into the episode. Don't worry about it.
Okay.
But here, I'm going to give you the link so you can watch that opening. The classic opening. Here's the thing. When I first played System Shock 2, it was in a dark room, and that was a big mistake. This opening was just terrifying to me.
Well, I mean, it's 2017 and I've worked in video games for a long time. There is absolutely no way I haven't heard Shodan's shit talking at some point or another.
Yeah, but the opening to the game is just classic. You know, it's just it's like the beginning of I'm not going to even bother enthusing about it. I will say thank God they patched out the weapon degradation. That was a real pain.
Mhm.
Speaking of weapon degradation,
is this going to be some sort of Jokic commercial now?
No, that seems to be a complaint with some people with Breath of the Wild. They don't.
Oh yeah.
Weapon degradation.
Yeah.
It's not that bad. It's not as bad as people make it out to be. Yeah, it sucks losing a cool weapon, but you know what? There's fucking weapons everywhere.
Is there a way to maintain it? Because at least in System Shock 2, you could maintain weapons and heal them.
The only way to maintain your arsenal is to throw it away and get a new one, to do in the game. It's really, really easy. It's literally walking a block. Like, say you run out of like Coca-Cola. Run up the block to the drugstore and grab some more Coca-Cola.
Enemies are always dropping weapons. I watched a Let's Play, and a guy came in, he had a weapon, killed like three enemies, and there were at least two or three weapons dropped by those enemies. So even if your sword breaks right then and there, there's probably a replacement right there.
Yeah, but you can't get attached to a weapon then like you can in other games, you know? I mean, can you imagine if that happened in World of Warcraft? You got your purple item, and it's like the sword of 1,000 truths, and then it breaks down, you have to throw it away? No, people would riot.
All you're saying is that all the weapons
suck in the game. Even if they're powerful, they suck in terms of wanting to keep them.
Some are certainly better than others, but here's the thing. None of them are the Master Sword, so who gives a fuck?
Exactly.
Okay. Speaking of Nintendo, go ahead, TJ.
Switch stock and sellouts could be a problem for Nintendo. From Forbes.
By the way, this is an opinion piece, just so you know.
As anyone could have expected, it's more or less impossible to find a Nintendo Switch right now. The console just saw a successful launch with estimates of The console just saw a successful launch with estimates of up to 1.5 million sold, which seems more like a measure of how many consoles Nintendo made than anything else. Sell it to happen, especially with Nintendo. Well, note that you still can't reliably buy many Nintendo NES Classic Edition, representing who knows how much lost income for the Japanese. Sorry, this is a fucking ridiculous sentence. Sellouts happen, especially with Nintendo. Well, note that you still can't buy a mini NES Classic Edition, representing who knows how much lost income for the Japanese game maker. International retailers still aren't sure when new stock is coming in, and what stock U.S. stores have received is sold out within moments. Memories of the Wii make people nervous. It could be a problem for a company that wisely chose to launch its console in a less competitive March, but needs to be able to take advantage of the spotlight. The next major target for Nintendo is the launch of Mario Kart 8 Deluxe in April, which qualifies as important because local multiplayer forms one of the Switch's main competitive advantages, and Mario Kart is one of Nintendo's best franchises to showcase it. So we're going to need plenty of Switch stock available at that time, or else Nintendo's plan of dripping out big titles over the spring and summer loses some of its advantage. More than that, however, is the plain and simple momentum of launch and Breath of the Wild. The Switch is new and shiny right now, with one of the best-reviewed games of all time to boot. If someone sees a Switch on the train and gets interested, Nintendo wants to be able to turn that into a sale. It's all about striking when the iron is hot and building the post-launch momentum that the Wii U never quite managed. Scarcity can drive up demand, and I think that it probably would have looked bad if the Switch didn't sell out at launch, simply because that's what people expect. But once you've generated demand, it's time to start capitalizing on it. Nintendo faces competition when the big titles of the fall start coming out, Super Mario Odyssey will bring some excitement along with it, but the plumber doesn't command the same loyalty that Zelda does. It's hard to imagine Mario bringing the same level of hype as Breath of the Wild or, more importantly, Red Dead Redemption 2. Shoring up the console's position in the interim will be the most important thing the company can do to take full advantage of the holidays, and that's hard to do without stock.
Go ahead, Scott. I know you want to say something here.
Yeah, it feels like Nintendo is derping because this really is the time for them to get as many of their consoles out as they can so that way people can buy the launch games as those get released. And it just feels like Nintendo is dropping the ball again.
You know that I found out that Breath of the Wild on the Wii U is exactly the same as the Switch version.
Yeah, it's pretty darn close, but I can take the Breath of the Wild version with me wherever I want to go. So,
well, I'm just saying, actually, you know, the fact of the matter is actually when it was first announced, it was going to be a Wii U game. I don't know if they ever intended to have the Switch at the time.
Yeah, and I think that is a big factor. And I mean, the draw distance on the Switch version is pretty damn good. I've seen recent side-by-sides of the Wii U, and you don't see certain distance details that I think are really cool when you look at it on the Switch. But yeah, it's very little things like that are the difference.
They're also not being able to see entities like monsters and movable objects that suddenly show up when you get closer. So that would kind of bother me because I'd like to be able to see at a distance where monsters and creatures are, and that is a problem on the Wii U version.
Yeah, but like I said before, the gaming public is so fickle. Right now, you can't swing a dead cat without reading about a mess about Andromeda. I mean, it's...
I haven't read anything about it, so I guess I can swing that dead cat all I want.
Well, it depends on what sites you're looking at.
That's true.
But, I mean, every gaming site that I've seen is just talking about Andromeda this, Andromeda that. Oh, the first 10 hours of Andromeda. You know, that's why I've had to avoid a lot of gaming sites, is because I'm a huge Mass Effect fan. I don't want it spoiled.
Well, Minecraft.net isn't talking about Mass Effect Andromeda.
Well, no, not until Microsoft releases the Mass Effect figures. Actually, they already did that a long time ago, didn't they? The Mass Effect outfits for Minecraft.
I didn't realize that. No,
they did a while ago.
Okay.
Well, you know, actually, when you start having Krogans running around as enemies in Minecraft, then you know you have a problem.
Yeah.
But I don't know. A lot of people who wanted the Switch are saying, "Let's wait until those problems are over." Because they're still hearing about the controller desyncs and the... Or is it an orange screen of death? Nintendo, by the way, actually did give instructions about how to cure the orange screen of death.
I think people are breaking their controllers or...
They're actually hurting themselves. They're actually hurting themselves with their fingernails. But...
How?
When they put in the... You know this, TJ. When you take out your controller, I forgot what they're called again.
Joy-Con.
Joy-Con. When you take a Joy-Con, you have to put it in a when you take it off the Switch, you have to put it on as a separate controller. You have to snap it into a holder, and people are hurting themselves trying to take it out of the holder.
Hmm.
I mean, all it takes is a little patience and a firm press and then a pull.
Yeah, you're not a 10-year-old boy.
I suppose
and
I'm
even
not.
Even adults are having problems. I mean, like I said, you had luck with your launch 360, so you've had your luck with your consoles.
I have had luck, and that is incredibly true. But I'm also not trying to jack that Joy-Con out of that control because it's a $50 thing by itself.
Yeah, I know, right?
Let me ask you a question.
Be careful with their stuff.
Do you have any intentions of buying a Pro Controller?
Not unless they put out a game that would make it like feel like I need to. Like I have
Zelda?
No, Zelda's pretty easy to manage. I'm talking about like maybe for Mario Kart Definitely if they ever put out a shooter worth having, and definitely if they ever put out a fighter game worth having, but not unless. Because, like, adventure games, you don't need to have, like, ridiculously good reflexes unless you're talking, like, Dark Souls, in which case, I don't know that that would ever come to Nintendo Switch.
I want to see Dark Souls on the Switch.
I think I like the idea of that Pro Controller. It does look nice and comfortable to use, and I think I might get it if I ever get the Switch, but at this point, I just don't know. There's not a lot of games out for it yet.
Yeah, it's a little $70 not a lot on the horizon for a Pro
I'm interested
though.
In either.
I'm willing to bet money that by the time that, well, probably even before Mario Odyssey comes out, we'll already start getting Switch bundles, like something with Breath of the Wild, maybe with Mario Kart.
I'd rather see that if for people Switch, you know what they should have for Switch bundles is a game and a Pro Controller. You know that people would go for.
Yeah, I would definitely go for that, but I doubt Nintendo will do it.
It doesn't have to be Nintendo. It could be, like, Best Buy or Amazon.
Oh, okay.
You know, I wonder if Amazon... Yeah. I got to see what Amazon is selling the Pro Controller for. If it's... Because I know they're not going to sell for 70. But maybe they bring it down to 50, you know?
Yeah. I'm interested to see how ARMS does in the summer. That's the one that's like a sort of competitive head-to-head punch-out game.
Oh, just the opposite. This Nintendo Switch Pro Controller, $120.
Wow.
Or $91 for new offers. The Nintendo Switch Joy-Con charging grip is only $30.
Yeah.
I am interested in the Dragon Quest XI. So
Nintendo Switch Joy-Con left, right, neon, red, neon, blue is $80. What's going on here? I thought these things were supposed to be like $50. Or no, $50 each?
It's $50 for one. $80 gets you the left and the right controller.
Oh, dear God.
If
I'm going to spend that much money, it better be a friggin' like my Elite controller on the Xbox One, you know, something that's built to last.
I will say this: you don't really. Nobody probably needs that charging grip. I've played on my Switch for like 6 hour long sessions for like 3 days, and only after that did it finally tell me your controllers are starting to run short on battery. You might want to slip them in.
The left one runs out faster than the right one.
Possibly, but that's also the one that's been getting the syncing issues. So maybe it's expending more energy to get connected.
I think the thing is that the one on the left is actually, if I remember correctly, is one with extra electronics because it has to do more when you have them hooked up onto the sides of your Switch.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, but they're selling the Tough Pouch Black for Nintendo Switch for $18. Do you have one of those, you know, a little case for your Switch?
I just invested in a screen protector. I'm not planning on taking it anywhere anytime soon, so I haven't gotten a carrying case yet.
What's the point of having the Switch then? I mean, it's better as a portable than it is a home console.
I mean, I use it as a portable anyways in my house when my wife is asleep at 12 in the morning and I want to play.
she's watching TV while you play your Switch thing?
No, she's asleep.
I know. I'm just asking. I'm asking you, your wife comes in, I want to watch TV. Okay, I'll take it off my thing and just start playing it on as a console.
Pretty much. Also, my dryer just broke at my house, so I'm probably going to be taking it to the laundromat here soon.
What, you don't bring a good book? Shame on you. Shame on you. Anyways, look for our show notes at GamingPodcast.net, along with the industry news and our gaming history articles. Enjoy feedback, and leave us comments on our blog at GamingPodcast.net. Also, hit us up at Facebook.com/GamingPodcast. Subscribe to us on iTunes and leave us some iTunes comments. I am at Jonah Falcon.
I am at Johnny Chugs.
I am at Alpha Shard.
And we will see you next week. And, you know, I actually got into a raffle for Nintendo Switch, so if I win it, I'll just send it to you, Scott. You'll get more enjoyment out of it than me. Because either that or I'll just sell it on eBay.
Aw, come on. It's fine. Whatever you want.
Are you looking forward to Red Dead Redemption 2?
That might be cool, yeah. I'd like to see more of the gameplay of what they're planning with it. It looks interesting.
How about you, TJ?
I need to know more than the 1 minute we know of.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, yeah.
The one thing I really want to know is who it's starring and when. That's basically the information. Because we know where it's going to be. It's going to be in American Southwest in Mexico. Actually, you know what? I was thinking, imagine if it goes up into 19th century California, because there's a lot of possibilities there, and even going up into Canada and Alaska, because that's when the big gold rush was. It started in 1849, but it went up into Alaska later in the century. So that'd be that'd be interesting. You know, having a Red Dead Redemption that revolves around the gold rush.
That would be fun.
So you go prospecting for gold?
That's part of it, yeah. Part of it is that, and you know, you have to have claim
jumpers. Robbing people who are prospecting for gold.
I was about to say, you have claim jumpers, and you know, but I don't know if it's that would be what the game is about. It'd be about you, but you could also pan for gold and stuff like that. You know, maybe Jack Marston becomes a
bounty hunter?
No, not a bounty hunter.
I would love a bounty hunter.
No, Wyatt Earp was a lawman, but I forgot the oh god, I forgot the term for it.
Vigilante?
No. It was an interstate thing, and God, I'm forgetting.
Oh,
Marshal. You play a marshal. You play a U.S. Marshal instead of, you know, and you have to go around the United States, and your things take you up into Canada and down into Mexico. I mean, think about that. That is a wow. So they're gonna do it based in the 1980s drug trade in Mexico, like they did with that other game. Although I will say it was a good game.
The art did not look like it was 1980s.
Yeah, well, you never know. In the 80s,
it really did not look 1980s.
Are you in... TJ's in Austin, right?
I'm in... I'm just south of it.
Oh, okay.
All I know is that if they do anything with like a gold rush, they have got to have some throwback to that guy that spent the entire Red Dead Redemption plotline just trying to get to California and then died in the desert.
You know what would be real neat is if they actually bring back characters from Red Dead Revolver.
That game, Red Dead Redemption 2, had so many side quests to end.
You mean Red Dead Redemption, not 2, because 2 hasn't come out yet.
I'm sorry, I guess. I'm thinking... Anyways, yeah. Sorry, then the first one. There was a lot of side quests that, you know, it seemed simple enough, and then it goes, like, really dark and twisted so many times.
Are you referring to, like... Are you referring to the I Know You, what's it called, a sequence of things?
Not just that guy, but some of the other quests, too. Like, there was one guy that was, what was it? I'm trying to remember exactly what happened. But he was, like, tied up, and you think he's the victim, and you free him, and he's a freaking cannibal, and he was going after somebody, and now he's going after you. That kind of stuff. It was really messed up.
Yeah, and also you have, was it Jonah or Jesse? I forgot his name. You know, the guy who was really into dead people. And, of course, in Undead Nightmare, he's the only one who isn't getting eaten. As a matter of fact, he's dancing with them because he's always been a friend of the undead. There was a Jonah in the game, but it wasn't that character.
Right.
I just hope that you can have Jack Marston as U.S. Marshal, because it'd be depressing to think that he just became, you know, nothing but an outlaw. And there were a lot of outlaws who became U.S. Marshals in real U.S. history. So it's entirely possible. But, you know, I'm going to say this before we log off. The I Know You missions, I was having fun, you know, with Red Dead Redemption. It was a nice little jaunt, but the I Know You missions really put a twist on my vision of the game. You know, sort of like, okay.
Those were kind of mind screw ones where you never really know, and it's all up to your own interpretation what you think that guy is.
But it's just that it isn't that so much a mind screw as it is, okay, now we're getting to what the game is about. You know? What kind of person are you? Because that was a test. The two missions he sent you on are basically morality tests. And when he says, damn you, and he says, many people have, which either indicates he's God, because you say, God damn you, or he's the devil, or he's the angel of death. What I love is that...
Yeah, so I'm saying, you got like three interpretations right there.
And the thing is, he's standing on the hill saying, what a nice view this is. And later on, that's John Marston's grave.
Mm-hmm.
I always loved that segment. And the video I have on my Xbox One account is the ending in which after Jack shoots the FBI guy, he turns towards the camera, and then you have dang, Red Dead Redemption, that logo pops up like that. So that's my page video. Anyways, we will see you next week.
Happy gaming, everyone.
Take care, y'all.